Well, bringing in a tree to celebrate Christmas was brought to us by German immigrants who arrived here in about the 17th century. And today, that long-standing tradition, it might see some changes due to global warming. I'm Jill Najoe. Thanks for joining us on the Ideas Network. Our next guest is Gary Chestagner. He is a professor of plant pathology at Washington State University. Are you a real Christmas tree fan? Have you switched to artificial? How come? Be part of the conversation. Give us a call, 800-642-1234, or you can send us an email. That's ideas@wpr.org. Hi, Gary.
Hi, Jill.
Thank you so much for being with us. Why don't you tell us a little bit about your work with Christmas trees?
Sure. So I'm, as you indicated, I'm a professor of plant pathology at Washington State University, and I've been working on Christmas trees, primarily disease management, but also post-harvest quality since 1979, so quite a while.
Yes, for sure. Have you seen a lot of changes as far as some of the diseases that our Christmas trees are fighting?
Sure. There's been a change in the type of tree grown, the species of trees grown. So if you look in the past, there was a lot more Scotch pine, particularly like in Wisconsin there, and also spruces, Douglas fir. Now the true firs, like Fraser fir and Noble fir, they account for about 60% of the production. And with those changes, there are certain diseases that become more common, such as Phytophthora root rot, which is a soil-borne disease that occurs when you have poor soil drainage.
Why have the choice of Christmas trees changed? Is it just what's popular, or are there other reasons?
That's a good question. There basically are other reasons. So some of the true firs, like the Fraser fir, the Noble fir, and some of the newer species we're working on, like Nordman and Turkish fir, they have much stiffer branches. They'll hold heavier ornaments. They have also much better moisture and needle retention. So you end up with a much higher quality tree that can be displayed for a longer period of time. When I was a kid growing up, our tree would be displayed for, a week or so around Christmas.
Right.
And in Europe, that's still the case in many situations. Now trees, consumers would like to have trees that can be displayed for a much longer period of time.
I know I have people in the neighborhood who have their tree up before Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
But it's not a real one, obviously, at that point. So where are most of our Christmas trees growing now?
Well, there's three major production regions: the Pacific Northwest, the coastal areas of Washington and Oregon. Oregon's the number one producing state. The Pacific Northwest produces about a little more than a third of the total U.S. production, followed by North Carolina. And then there's a significant amount of production in the Great Lakes states of Michigan, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin. Those are the top six producing areas or states. But the fact is that there's Christmas trees grown in most every state, and in many cases there's lots of choose-and-cut farms as opposed to larger wholesale farms that are shipping trees throughout the U.S.
Now, for someone who's a consumer, it probably makes more sense to get one that's freshly cut. It's going to last longer, right?
That is the common perception, but it depends a lot about what the storage conditions are after cutting. Trees are amazing in that some of the early work we did showed that you could actually dry a tree down if it was stored under relatively cool conditions. And if you cut the base off of that tree, it would rehydrate back up to the point of a fresh cut tree, and we rarely saw differences between a tree that had been cut and stored for a period of time versus one that had been freshly cut. The key is what the environmental conditions are, where the tree has been stored, and what the environmental conditions are on the retail lot before the consumer purchases the tree.
So is there something that we should be looking for when we go out to pick a tree at a lot?
If you see a tree that is shedding any green needles, that's an indication that there's potentially a problem with the tree and that it's likely that it has been allowed to dry below these threshold moisture levels that the trees can tolerate and stuff. There may be dead needles on the inside of the tree, and so many of the trees are cultured, and so they're very dense. So not a lot of light gets to those needles on the inside of the trees. So the trees shed those trees naturally, those needles naturally. So that's not an issue other than you want to make sure and shake the tree or whatever before you take it in so you don't have a bunch of dead needles falling out of the tree.
Right.
But if you see green needles coming off of a tree, you're better off to select another tree.
Yes. We've all seen the movie Christmas Story, right?
Yeah, yes.
So let's get to the point we really want to talk about here, and that is, what has been the effect of changing climate for Christmas tree growers?
Well, there's two aspects, to the climate change. There's the aspect if you're out in the West and many other locations as well, but particularly in the West, lack of precipitation during the summer and high temperatures, so moisture stress, heat stress. The changing climate can also result in greater periods of precipitation during certain times of the year. So if we look at the moisture stress issue, that has having an effect and has had an effect here for a number of years, particularly in a variety of areas where the seedlings don't survive very well. Most Christmas trees are not irrigated. So plantings of Christmas trees typically are not irrigated, and so the growers are dependent upon the soil having adequate soil moisture for that seedling when it's first planted to establish new roots and grow and then be able to survive over that first summer and that growing season. So there's been situations where some growers may lose up to 50% of the seedlings that they're planting, and this is not different than what you would see if you're replanting a forested area. So that's one of the areas where there's been problems. And then we've seen some direct heat damage just because the temperatures have been so high in some areas, like when we had our heat dome event here where we broke all kinds of long-term high record temperatures and just damage to the foliage. It basically burned up and stuff. And then we see some situations where we have wet falls or wet springs, wetter than normal, and we see root rot, Phytophthora root rot, and we also see some issues where the stress that trees are under predisposes them to other insect problems and disease problems that normally would not be of that great a concern. But because the trees have been stressed, you end up with more disease problems or more insect problems.
So what kind of research is being done to help the growers, probably right the seedlings that they get to be more adaptable to these changes?
So that is, it does start at the seedling stage. So there's research going on not only in Christmas tree growers, but also in forestry to look at, do there need to be some changes in the type of seedlings that are planted? In other words, maybe planting a seedling that has a larger root system compared to the top of the tree to what they call the root to shoot ratios. And so if you have a larger root system, you have a better quality tree. But that may involve actually planting a smaller seedling than is planted typically. And there's also some work going on as it relates to planting time of the year. Most seedlings are planted in the spring, so there's some work going on about planting them in the fall. That gives the roots a chance to become well established and the seedlings survive better. And then there's work going on about potentially mulching small seedlings with just a little bit of mulch at the time of planting on the surface of the soil, and that's been quite promising as well. The other aspect, when we're looking at trees that are more established and disease issues and insect issues, we're looking at trees potentially that are more tolerant to drought stress, heat stress, some of the Eurasian species such as Nordman and Turkish fir, that a lot of work has been done on. They appear to have some promise as it relates to their ability to withstand some of the stress conditions a little better than others.
We did get an email from Tim and Linda, and they have white spruce trees in western Wisconsin that appear to be dying. Is there a disease that affects white spruce, or do you think the nearby black walnut trees can kill them? Are you familiar with what's going on here in Wisconsin, Gary?
I'm not familiar with the white spruce and particularly what's going on in Wisconsin. I mean, black walnuts can suppress the growth of plants underneath those trees or near those trees. But what I would suggest they do is they contact a plant clinic. I'm sure there's a plant clinic at the University of Wisconsin, and or contact their local county agent. Most universities, land grant universities like WSU, they have county extension people that can help maybe diagnose the specific problem and are much more knowledgeable about it than I am.
Yeah, I was going to suggest the same thing. We have great Wisconsin, UW Wisconsin Extension agents throughout the
yes.
state. And also the DNR would probably be a good place to go there too. And I have noticed that white spruce trees have been dying and there's no black walnuts nearby. So I can guarantee you it's not them. So yeah, unfortunately, I know I've had to cut quite a few of them down because they just die from the bottom, and yeah, it's kind of a shame. So, but thank you for the email. If you've got a question for Gary, give us a call, 800-642-1234. Besides the things that you're talking about, how are Christmas tree growers reacting to what has been going on with the weather changes?
So the reality is, if you're a grower, whether it's Christmas trees or other crops, you're always dealing with uncertainties
sure.
and changing things. And so growers tend to be very resilient people. They tend to be people that solve problems and figure out ways to deal with changes and stuff. So what the growers are doing is they're looking for research-based information to help guide them. So some of the grower industry groups are supporting research to help provide information on what some best approaches would be. And the other thing, too, I think that's important to realize is that although the climate changes have affected trees in a variety of locations, they are not universal. So there are some areas where, like during our heat dome event in 2021, where there was very little, if any, damage to the trees. But there are other areas where the trees were severely damaged and stuff. So it's not something that just comes in and wipes out all the trees. There's pockets of areas. Now, for those people who are being impacted, it's a significant problem. But the growers are responding and trying to get information. If the information is not already available, they're looking to support research efforts to help solve some of or answer some of the questions that they have. One of the bigger impacts potentially that climate change may have in certain areas, which potentially could be a little wider spread, is the effect of having warm falls on needle retention. Needle retention in Christmas trees is It's a very complex process, physiological process. But what is known is that shorter day lengths contribute to better needle retention. Cold exposure to cold temperatures prior to harvest contributes to needle retention. We've developed a detached branch test that we can screen trees for their genetic potential for having superior needle retention, even without cold acclimation. And that's being widely used now across the U.S., Canada, and in Europe. And what's happening is the industry is screening material, putting this into seed orchards so that the new crops of seedlings that will come along in the future will have better needle retention, be not as sensitive to the lack of cold acclimation, so that if there's an increased frequency of warm fall temperatures, the post-harvest quality of those trees is not going to be negatively impacted.
Mm-hmm. What about fire? I mean, I know California in particular out there, there's been a lot of that. Has that been one of the bigger threats to Christmas tree farms?
Fire in the in Christmas tree farms is a concern, and growers in areas where they're where it's basically a very dry summer. For example, in western Washington, last year we had a half of an inch of precipitation between mid-June and early September. So we have very, very little precipitation. And so growers are always concerned about, you know, the perimeters of fields, keeping the weeds down so that you don't have fire starting that spreads into Christmas trees. But there have been some situations, like in California a couple of years ago, there was a large forest fire. There were many Christmas tree choose and cut farms within the area that the forest fire was burning. And of course, when that forest fire spread through the area, it also damaged trees in the Christmas tree plantings. But so in certain areas, fire is a threat and stuff, and growers have tried to manage that risk by cutting down the flammable material that's around Christmas trees. And they're very careful about driving vehicles out into fields where there might be weeds that they come in contact with a hot exhaust system or something like that, just like you would be if you went into the forest.
Sure. Well, that makes a lot of sense. Bobby in Iron River emailed us, and she's wondering about the strong smell of Christmas trees and other conifers. What's the function of their scent? And she also wants to know if you have a real tree in your house.
Yeah, so the odor associated with Christmas trees, or the aroma associated with Christmas trees, those are largely terpene compounds, and they're probably responsible in many cases for plant defense mechanisms and things. And some Christmas trees, you know, have much more of an aroma or odor than others. Balsam fir, for example, has a very pronounced aroma. And many people buy trees largely because there's that fragrance associated with them. And when I get asked questions about real trees, yes, I do have real trees. And in fact, one of the things my family, we do is we have grandkids, and so our grandkids are not in this state. They're like in Tucson or Michigan.
Uh-huh.
And so I'll cut small trees, and I check them in as baggage when we're going, like, Thanksgiving and stuff, and I take trees to the grandkids. And the grandkids love it. They get their own tree to decorate.
Oh, that's wonderful. What a great idea, Gary. I love that. And that, as far as doing that, traveling with a tree, oh my gosh. So how do you prepare that?
What we do is we just cut the trees, and I wrap them up fairly tightly and put them in either a large paper bag, or I wrap them up with wrapping, a sort of a butcher paper type thing,
sure.
And put string around them and go to the airport. And sometimes the bottom of the trees or the top of the trees are sticking out of the bag. And when I'm checking it in, they'll ask me what it is. And everyone thinks it's a very nice story, and
sure.
So they have no problems. They put a tag on it and I check it in.
I love it. I love that. Well, if anybody sees someone traveling with a Christmas tree, say hey to Gary.
Yeah.
I don't think that happens very often. So just in the last minute and a half or so, what are the best things that we can do to keep our Christmas tree fresh in our houses?
Well, the number one thing is when you go and you select a tree, whether it's at a choose and cut farm or whether or not it's at a more traditional lot or a big box store, to cut that base off, make a fresh cut on the base, you don't need to remove much. Display that tree in water. Most people do not understand how much water a tree can take. And as a general rule, a tree will consume potentially up to a quart of water per each inch of stem diameter. So if you had a tree that had a 4-inch diameter stem at the base, it needs to go in a stand that'll hold at least a gallon of water, and then you need to check it. The reason for that and the importance of that is that displaying that tree in water will minimize needle loss, and it'll make that tree last 2 to 3 times longer. When we run display trials and display trees in water, we've been able to display like Nordman fir, noble fir, some of these true firs for 6 to 8 weeks. The longest ones we've ever displayed are 3 months.
Wow.
So you can display the trees for a very long period of time if they're displayed in water and given proper care.
Wonderful. Well, that is very good advice, and we really appreciate you coming on to talk to us about Christmas trees, Gary, and thank you for all of your research.
My pleasure.
And happy holidays. We've been talking with Gary Chastagner, a professor of plant pathology at Washington State University. Join us again tomorrow for a special edition of our book club. We've asked a bunch of our regular guests to talk about their favorite books. So that's tomorrow, starting at 11, right until 12:30 on the Ideas Network. I'm Jill Nadeau. Thanks for joining us. Stay well.